This week's parsha is pretty easily divided into three sections. There are three very clear parts of this week's parsha. First, we were told about the halachos of Nedarim. We heard that on Shabbos afternoon, Monday and Thursday, clearly throughout the first Aliyah, the entire section about Nedarim. And then we have the war with Midian and its accompanying halachos that relate to the war with Midian. And that's where we learn Tfilas Kelim and Hagolas Kelim, a whole set of very important halachos. But that's really about the war with Midian. And then finally, we have the request of the Bnei Gad and Bnei Reuven to receive the area that we now know as Jordan as their portion in Eretz Yisrael. That's where they want to stay rather than go into Eretz Yisrael. So the parsha begins with Moshe Rabbeinu teaching us the halachos of Nedarim. And on the surface, that parsha, that section of the Torah, is just like any other section of the Torah where Moshe Rabbeinu gives us a series of halachos that relate to all of Klal Yisrael. But there are some very unique elements to the way in which Moshe Rabbeinu transmits the halachos of Nedarim. And some are noted by Rashi, some are not. For instance, the one that is noted by Rashi very famously is that typically when something is taught to Klal Yisrael, let's put it this way, this parsha, along with the parsha of Shechutei Chutz, are the only places in the Torah where Moshe introduces the halachos with the term Zeh HaDavar, as opposed to the more common term Ko Amar Hashem. And Rashi notes Moshe Rabbeinu was the only Navi that could say Zeh HaDavar. Everyone else had to just say Ko Amar. And there's a lot of Torah as to why that is the case, what the difference is between Zeh HaDavar and Ko Amar. Whatever the reason is, whatever level of Nevuah is being described as Moshe Rabbeinu being able to say Zeh HaDavar, which pashtus means that he had a greater clarity, Aspaklari Ami'ira, he was able to see things clearly. Zeh always means that you can point to it, that it's like it's right in front of you. Ko Amar is roughly, you know, that this is the basic idea. So that level of clarity of Moshe Rabbeinu's Nevuah, that Zeh HaDavar, why would the Torah Dafka want to highlight that over here? In the Parsha of Nedarim. Of all the places to highlight that, why Dafka over here by the Parsha of Nedarim? And furthermore, when Moshe teaches this Parsha, he doesn't just teach it to Klal Yisrael. He gives it over to the Rashi Amatos, who then presumably are supposed to hand it over to the rest of Klal Yisrael. But he teaches it to the Rashi Amatos, so apparently he thinks that there are leadership skills that are being taught here, or something that can't be broken to the people, that has to be given Dafka to the leaders of the people. So what's going on over here? So again, question number one, or one and two, is why is it that this parsha of Nedarim is given over in a different way than the rest of Torah, both in terms of the emphasis on Zeh HaDavar, as well as why he Dafka chooses to focus on the leaders rather than on all the people. Second thing we find is that in this week's parsha, an old friend or an old foe comes up again in this week's parsha. In the description of the battle with Midian and how we killed all of their kings, the Torah mentions, oh yeah, by the way, Vez Bilam ben Ba'ar hargu b'charev. We managed to kill Bilam ben Ba'ar in this week's parsha as well. So the obvious kasha, you know, what in the world is this doing over here? It's particularly interesting that when we first describe the sin with the Benos Midian, the Torah doesn't make any mention of Bilam's role in facilitating the sin. The Torah places the blame squarely on the shoulders of Klal Yisrael. Vayachal ha'am liznos al benos moav. It's the nation that violates this Aveira. Yet now, after the war with Midian, Moshe tells the officers that they should have killed the women as well, because hein hein ahayu l'bnei Yisrael b'dvar bilam limsor me'al ba'ashem al dvar pa'or. He shifts the focus onto Bilam, that Bilam is the one that caused these women to lead us into this sin, and he emphasizes Bilam rather than just how we sinned ourselves. So why the shift of focus when it comes to the sin of the benos moav? And third, final question, toward the end of the parsha, the Bnei Gad and Bnei Reuven try to work out a deal with Moshe Rabbeinu, which would not require them to take a piece of Eretz Yisrael proper, but instead settle Be'ever Yarden, which seemed to be a land that was ideal for their particular needs. It was very suitable for their needs. So Moshe Rabbeinu, of course, you know, gives them a little bit of Musar and compares them to the Meraglim and their desire to stay out of Eretz Yisrael. And the way the Torah records the conversation, though, is a little bit strange. In the Torah, in the Masorah, the way we have the Torah written, there are psuchos and stumos, there are breaks in the Torah, in different spots. So the breaks are supposed to come at somewhat logical times, you would think. The way the conversation goes is that first they inform Moshe, you know, this land is great for cattle, we happen to have a lot of cattle, lavadecha mikne, and then there's, in your chumash, a samach, indicating a parsha stuma. End of paragraph. So you expect, okay, next paragraph is going to be Moshe Rabbeinu's response. Except it's not. The next paragraph is the continuation of what they say. Vayomru imatzanu chen beinecha yitin es haaretz hazos lavadecha la'achuza al tavirenu es hayardein. If, you know, if it's okay by you, we'd really like to stay here, Moshe Rabbeinu. And then you have Moshe Rabbeinu's response. Very weird way to split it up, no? They start off by saying, this land is so, it's really good for us. It suits our needs. Pause. Awkward silence. Can we stay here? And then Moshe Rabbeinu responds. What's going on? Why would the pause be at that spot? So it's possible to suggest that there's a theme that threads its way through the entire parsha. And the theme of this parsha, and perhaps even why it's read during this time of the year, if we go back to that idea of the parsha is falling out during certain times of the year, is the recognition of the power of Dibur. We begin with the parsha of Nedarim. That's the easy one. The message of the topic of Nedarim is that we have the ability, through words alone, to take something that's completely harmless, completely benign, and make it Asur Mida Oraisa. This blackberry right here, I use it all day. I can use it whenever I want. There's no problem except for Shabbos. I'm totally okay. I keep full Shabbos, not half. I could use it whenever I want to use it. It's all fine. But if I were to take a neder, simple words, this would become an Issur D'Oraisa for me. A person has the ability to create an Issur D'Oraisa. Chassam Sofer famously in the Tshuva claims that minhagim are worse than violating a minhag is worse than violating an Issur D'Rabban, because a minhag sometimes takes on the status of a neder, and a neder is a D'Oraisa. Okay. That tells you something about the power of words. A single sentence, a neder, not to get enough for my car, for my phone, and all of a sudden driving my car, using my phone is a worse avera than eating a chicken and cheese sandwich. Unbelievable. That's the koach of dibur. The reason this parsha is introduced with the term zeh davar is to show us the precision of the wording. The term zeh, as we said, always means something that you could point to with absolute clarity. God said this and exactly this. Clarity in the words used is critical for the parsha of Nedarim. If there's ever a time that we need to be told about how HaKadosh Baruch Hu is careful in choosing his words and how Moshe is loyal in transmitting those words, it's in the parsha where we learn about how we're supposed to be like HaKadosh Baruch Hu on that level. We're supposed to imitate HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the sense that we have to be careful how we choose our words. There has to be precision in the way we speak. May also be the reason that the parsha of Nedarim was taught to the leadership first. Because while words matter for everybody, when leaders say things, it matters a lot more. When people are listening, when you're someone who's Chachamim hizaharu bidivreichem, Chazal warned. Chachamim have to be, everyone has to be careful in the word. Chachamim? Yeah, Chachamim have to be more careful in their words. The power of words is something that when a public figure, when someone who's a political leader, someone who's a religious leader, makes a statement, so it means something, and it can impact people's lives in ways that are beyond their wildest imagination. So after teaching us the power of speech and how careful we have to be with our speech, the Torah gives us one of the most striking examples of how destructive a few words can be. What was Bilaam's job? What did Bilaam do? He was hired. He was a hired gun. To do what? Well, to curse. And it didn't work out. So what did he do? He advised. Bilaam never picked up a spear. He never shot at us. He never killed Jewish babies. He never did anything like that. He never did any... None of the things that Paro did, Bilaam did. And look at the havoc that Bilaam was able to bring upon Klal Yisrael. Look at the destruction he was able to bring by advising. By failing in his curse and just advising. Unbelievable. That's a case in point of the Koach HaDibur. So yeah, we were at fault for the sin, and the Torah rightfully focuses on our sin when it tells us about the sin. But in Parshas Matos, the Torah is not telling us about the sin, the Torah is telling us about the Koach HaDibur. And in Parshas Matos, the emphasis shifts to Bilaam. Words, however, are not only destructive forces, but can sometimes help us clarify what we feel, can sometimes help us understand what we're saying, what we're doing, or how we're living our lives. And it could be very, very helpful. the Bnei Gad and Bnei Reuven knew that they were talking to one of the sharpest minds in the history of mankind. They were talking to the greatest leader in the history of the Jewish people, without question. They were talking to Moshe Rabbeinu. He's a man who got Kala Tarukula in 40 days, 40 nights. Not bad. They figured he's probably pretty smart. He's clever. And when they say, look, Moshe, this land over here, it's beautiful for us. It just fits our needs. It's so great. Moshe Rabbeinu is supposed to say, okay, I get it. I could put two and two together. You like the land. You want to stay here. Like, he should have been able to get it. And they weren't planning on having to actually say, we want to stay here. They didn't have to. They were setting it up, and Moshe Rabbeinu was supposed to, you know, cut them off and say, okay, let me ask God or whatever, let me think about it. But Moshe Rabbeinu doesn't respond. I don't get it. What are you saying? There's a silent, awkward pause. And he makes them say it. You're asking for something? Tell the man who lived his whole life with a dream of going into Eretz Yisrael and who's devastated that he's not going to be able to go into Eretz Yisrael, yeah, say those words to me, that you're not interested, that Eretz Yisrael doesn't mean enough to you, that you're happy where you are now. He forces them to say the words. Of what value is there in forcing them to say the words? He knew what they were talking about. He was quick enough. He understood. Moshe Rabbeinu understood the Koach HaDibur. He was hoping that that would jolt them a little bit. That would strike them a little bit. Wow, what am I saying? I'm telling Moshe Rabbeinu that I'd rather be here? It's one thing to do things, but sometimes you do things and you just forget. You don't even realize what you're doing until you have to say, you know, what did you do today? You ever have to answer that question? What did you do today? Oh my God, I did nothing today. I was on the computer for a little bit, a few minutes, maybe a few hours, I don't know. What did you do today? You have to actually say, what did you... Sometimes even you're in a base medrash. What did you learn today? It's one of my big pet peeves. This would be one of the shiurim, one of the yeshivas I was in, where it was like a big shiur. Everyone was like all excited about it. If you go to that shiur, then you're really great. I used to go over to the guys in the shiur. Well, what did the Rebbe say today? Oh, it was awesome. What did he say? You know, if just at the end of the day, just put into words exactly what happened. You know, what you did today, what you learned today. It's one of my big things in learning is at the end of every amud, I always say, okay, what are the three or four main points we got out of this amud of Gemara? That's the best way to just clarify in your own mind. What did it say? I was mocked when I started my Daf Yomi when I put the Shiurim online to give a title to each Daf, not just Chulin Daf Chavav or whatever. Chulin Daf Chavav and then the topic. Why? Because I wanted to spend 5 seconds after I gave the shiur thinking about what was the topic of this daf. It changes your learning. But anyway, I'm getting a little off topic. I think the message is what we're mourning during this period of the year was brought upon us by Sinas Chinam, and you know, so often Sinas Chinam expresses itself through the power of speech. And it does make sense that it's a very appropriate time of year to achieve a greater appreciation of the power of our own speech. The Parsha of Nedarim teaches us the value of every word and how carefully we have to measure each word. Bilam serves as an example, case in point, of how destructive our mouths can be. We usually wouldn't think in a million years of hurting anybody physically. We would hope we would never think of something like that. But we fail to realize a negative word here and there can hurt them even more and ultimately can lead to a person's undoing. And finally, the message of Moshe teaches that B'nai Gad and B'nai Reuven, it teaches that when we're unsure about something in life and a decision has to be made, sometimes it's helpful to just put it into words. Not just think about it, put it into words. What does this mean? What does that mean? What am I doing? And then we can properly make our choices in life.